Those are back, we invite you to come into the sanctuary for a presentation for the Bible class hour. Those of you in the back, come on in, and we will get started for our presentation this morning. It's good to have all of you with us for the Bible class hour today. It seems that pastors at St. Mark's, when they leave, for whatever reason, they get institutionalized. We sent Pastor Gerlach to the Vatican, synod headquarters, known as the Center for Mission and Ministry, and we have a new synod headquarters building. Our headquarters now is located at, which we can, I assume we might learn a thing or two about today, maybe?
Not the building.
All right, just the work. So Pastor Gerlach will take the first half hour, then the other pastor that we institutionalized was Pastor Tackmeyer, who is now Professor Tackmeyer and is indoctrinating our future pastors with Hebrew and homiletics and making sure they're good preachers and good theologians. It's not only great to have them back with us, but today we're essentially asking, what are they up to now? So with that, we'll give the first half hour to Pastor Gerlach and then turn things over to Pastor Tackmeyer, who will talk about the seminary. Let's welcome them both.
Thank you. It's so great to be back here, especially since somehow the Delta breezes were arranged overnight, and it was much more pleasant this morning. And this is working okay? Everyone can hear me okay? All right? Yeah? Good and back? Okay. What I'm sharing with you today is Google Drive. No. What I'm sharing with you today is part of a presentation that will be given at the Synod Convention later this summer. It's updating the highlights of several areas of work. And what I did is cut out the ones that I'm not so directly related with and expand a little bit the things that I am involved in. So you'll see references to the Synod Convention in these PowerPoint slides. And what I, in addition to serving as the director for the Commission on Worship, I'm also the coordinator for this group, the Congregation and Ministry Support Group. If you were in the early service, you heard Pastor Stray joke about the acronyms in Wells. This one is easy to remember. Just think monosodium glutamate and put a C on the front. and you won't forget that. There are seven areas that serve you and churches all over the country that make up the Congregation and Ministry Support Group. They are worship, evangelism, Lutheran schools, special ministries, adult discipleship, youth and family, and congregational counseling. Some of those are obvious. Special ministries isn't, because they're kind of the bucket that catches all sorts of special needs, like hearing impaired or blind or military or all sorts of things that aren't served often to the best of our abilities, and Special Ministries exists to help congregations and individuals in 8 different areas of special focus. Congregational counseling, that's to help struggling congregations solve problems and to help strong congregations become even stronger and have an even greater impact in their communities. And some of the program in that area was only launched with training last year in November, and already they have a backlog of congregations asking for their help. Here's another way to look at the area for which I am coordinator, the 7 units, but then the people who serve in them. And I apologize for the fine print, but some of you will be able to decipher the fine print and notice a trend in there. Pastor Stray alluded to it already. Worship is the 3rd from the left, and my name is there. At the far right, if you go down, there is the coordinator for early childhood ministry, Cindy Holman, whom many of you know. And if you back up 1 from the right, you see the director for special ministries is Jim Beringer, who I know some of you don't know him, but he used to serve the church in Penryn. So there's something going on here, but don't take it personally. What are the goals? What are the interests of the Congregation and Ministry Support Group? Locally, we try to help congregations be stronger and healthier in every way, every of those 7 areas: worship and evangelism, youth and family, adult discipleship, special ministries, to help congregations solve problems that they have or simply move to a next level of excellence if that's what they're looking for. And locally, the obvious intent of that is that congregations thrive and that the people in those congregations feel the strength of God's word in ever-increasing ways, and that their worship is something that is inspiring for them, and they have a greater impact in their community and find more and more people to reach for Jesus. But the goals of our work are not only local in the sense of what a congregation can be and become or improve and that sort of thing. The goals are also when we together, as over 1,000 congregations all over the country, band together, what can we do? And the reality is that we aren't opening as many churches now as we used to in the heyday of the 70s and the 80s. And we have some wonderful things happening in world missions, but there are so many more opportunities. So the command and the promises that Jesus gave us to have an impact, to carry the word out into the world, to be salt and light to every nation, there's so much more we could be doing. And the stronger and healthier that local congregations are, the more we will be able to accomplish that work, not only nationwide, but worldwide. This emphasis on congregational health is one that's been kind of percolating in the last couple of years. You know, there are some who would say, well, you know, congregations have a lot of talented people in them, so, you know, they can figure out what to do. And often that is the case. But sometimes there are, you know, roadblocks and obstacles that some congregations need an assisting hand. And this year, the COP, that's the Conference of Presidents, their report to the Synod Convention includes this comment, that the COP, the Conference of Presidents, intends to work with the Commission on Congregational Counseling and other entities of the CMSG to help congregations grow stronger and healthier through the means of grace. Of course, the growing through the means of grace, that's the main thing, but some things are not means of grace. They're just practical. They're technology, maybe, or they're planning and strategizing, and those aren't necessarily means of grace. But congregations often need help with those things as well. And the CCC, that's the Commission on Congregational Counseling, you would expect their report to emphasize this. What do they want to see happening? How do they define a healthy congregation? One that is regularly asking itself, what else can we do to help all people know Jesus? You know, it can happen that we get into our comfortable patterns and our comfortable priorities, and we keep rolling with those comfortable things, and sometimes our field of vision can kind of narrow down a bit, and we want that field of vision to become very broad. and look for new ways and strengthen existing ways to have an impact in our communities. So that's the larger entity where I only spend a smaller proportion of my time. The greatest amount of my time is in the Commission on Worship and a variety of things we do there. Here is a picture of the National Worship Conference closing service from last summer at Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin. For whatever reason, when we first started doing these in 1996, we have been blessed far beyond our expectations. That's the only way I can put it. God has smiled on this event and the people who are involved in planning it and carrying it out in a way that I did not dream would happen. When we held the first one in 1996, we asked ourselves, well, what would we define as success? How many people? 300? 400? That would be wonderful. And we had over 800 at the first conference. Last summer, we had around 1,000 registered people. But this chapel seats 1,700 people and was packed almost to standing room only capacity. Packed for the closing service. Because guests are welcome who don't register for the conference, you know. At the very, not the center, but right in front of the organ there on the left, that's about 100 voice high school honor choir from all over the United States, and occasionally we draw people from Canada, from Lutheran congregations there. And you'll see them later, but a full orchestra of Wells people. And they come from all over. And some of them play in professional orchestras. We had two from the San Francisco Symphony at one time. The principal flautist of the Seattle Symphony is playing in this orchestra. A cellist from the Duluth Symphony. And then additional musicians who maybe don't have that kind of skill level, but they're still really good. And they love coming to this event and participating in the worship that we plan there. It's a little bit like if you visit the Grand Canyon, you know, I can show you a picture of the Grand Canyon, but it's nothing like being there. And I have to tell you, when you have 1,700 people raising their voices in song to honor our Lord with a full orchestra blazing away, that is just a few steps short of heaven, I think. It's really a kick to pull these things off. And that emphasis in congregational health was at our last conference as well. The plenary address speaker, John Hine, is the director of congregational counseling, and his address was entitled Compelling Worship. The address, though, isn't only about worship. It's about all kinds of things that are behind the scenes before we gather together as a worshiping group. And that presentation is available online if anyone wants to track it down. If you get to the Wells website and just Google, or you just Google, for that matter, Wells Compelling Worship, you'll eventually find this presentation. High school honor choir, I mentioned already, 90 to 100 kids. It was the same summer as the Wells International Youth Rally, so we kind of have to compete when that happens. When we aren't on the same summer, we've had as many as 140 high school kids participating. And for the first time in 2011, and again last summer, we had a children's choir with an amazing director both years, people who are at the peak of their careers and are noted nationally for their abilities, Wells directors who work with kids, but known in the secular world as extraordinary people as well. We had about, I think, 58 kids in grades 5 to 8 or so, with unchanged voices. So if any of you love music and want to encourage that sort of thing, it's really neat when you see publicity about this again. For me, one of the most gratifying things about the National Worship Conference, especially this last summer, is all the young talent. You know, sometimes people my generation and older kind of wring their hands about, you know, what about the future of the church and the young people and that sort of thing. Well, those kids aren't very old, those two violin players there. They happen to be children of the cellist from the Duluth Symphony. So there's a little encouragement going on there, you know. And I remember, maybe it was 2005 or 2002, these two little boys were in a rehearsal room with their Game Boys, you know. Now they're playing in the orchestra. How cool is that? At this same conference last summer, a 13-year-old girl from Vancouver, British Columbia, was present with her violin. Her grandmother gave her the trip to the worship conference as a confirmation present. This 13-year-old girl had never worshiped in her life with more than 30 people. And from various vantage points, when I would be walking around and watching the orchestra played in the opening service as well, you could see this 13-year-old girl just except when she had to play, then she was focused on the conductor. More young talent. I think this one is just finishing a master's degree in violin at the University of Wisconsin. More young talent, there's a seminary student. I think this is Kevin Schultz, pastor's son from San Diego. And he might be vicaring this year. And a young pastor, phenomenal talent. He's from Midland, Michigan. Look, that organ's a wee bit bigger than St. Mark's. It's got four keyboards. This one only has two. But for all the whiz-bang of splendid music and talented people and that sort of thing, let's not forget that the power isn't in the excellence or the quality or the professionalism. The power is in the means of grace. You know, it's word and sacrament that make things tick. And we never want to just stop the conversation there and say, well, we've offered word and sacrament, so there's nothing else to talk about. We always want to say, how can we do better? But let's never forget the bedrock of word and sacrament. I wish the resolution was a little better on this picture, because I put this up to ask if you recognize anybody. Anybody? What's it? Yeah. Your principal's brother, distributing communion in the center there. Those Bauer boys, they all look kind of alike. Are you in here, Matt? Sorry. There he is. So we do this again in 2017. There are the dates. It's not only for pastors and musicians. We've intentionally structured it so that anyone who loves Bible class will have a blast at the worship conference. Lay people who aren't musicians can't even sing a note. There's always something in every workshop time slot. We have 60 different workshops at these. Atlanta and Phoenix, we've always done this in the Midwest because that's the heartland of Wells, but we only get 100 people from the saltwater districts and South Central Texas, Arizona. We only get 100 people from there. So we're intending, we haven't solidified this for sure yet, but we are intending to be in Atlanta, hoping for 150 to 200 people, and Phoenix for 200 to 300 people. And that's the anniversary year of the Reformation, of course. So that's one of our contributions there. Another thing that my office coordinates are schools of worship enrichment. And you were the host for this 3 or 4 years ago at Reformation. And I was able to be part of the team that was giving that workshops back then. You, however, were also the host for the pilot project that launched Schools of Worship Enrichment. Not because I came begging back to you and said, please, can we do this in your church? But because some people here said, you know, I think what we need is, and they described it. And one of your pastors contacted me and I said, I think that's a great idea. We've been talking about doing that. So you were the guinea pigs. Since the 1993 hymnal was published, there have been 16 significant volumes or projects managed by the Commission on Worship. The hymnal supplement that's in the pews here, the sales are over 1 million, which in the secular world, that's a drop in the bucket, but in Wells' world, that's pretty good. We publish two newsletters, one to help pastors in their preaching, one to help worship planners in their worship planning. We've commissioned 31 musical compositions since 1993 for the national worship conferences and sometimes for the publications that we do. 13 CDs, these are still available from Northwestern Publishing House, musical highlights from the worship conferences, etc. And Pastor Stray, what's my time? How am I doing? Hey, that's pretty good. There is a hymnal project going, as you may or may not know. I am not directly responsible for that. I'm an advisory member. No, I'm a regular member of the executive committee for the hymnal project. And there are 7 subcommittees working with various areas, from hymns to psalms to scripture / lectionary, the lessons that are read and preached on Sunday, to technology, communications. It's an amazing project, and it's attracted some very, very capable people in Wells, especially on the executive committee. It's just exciting how some people who are gifted in many, many areas and might say, no, I'd rather focus on outreach because that's what I love most. Well, they also love worship, and they're serving on the committees that will produce this hymnal. In case you're not aware, you can sign up at the hymnal website to receive occasional email updates about what is going on and notification of recent blog articles. You can also submit comments on anything you care to comment on, things you like and things you don't like about either what we do now or what you hear we might be doing in the future. If you are a poet or a composer, you can submit your work on this website as well. In the last couple of years, the communications subcommittee has been especially busy with 4 national surveys, different target audiences, pastors, teachers, lay people, whatever. Good results, 7,200 respondents. They also have 130 congregations that are weekly tabulating everything that they do in worship, and that all gets dumped into a database designed by a guy who, if he weren't a pastor down south in California, could be making a whole lot more money doing web work because he's so good. But he loves the church, and he's the chairman of the technology committee. In addition to the 130 congregations that track their choices in worship, there are 25 congregations that are focusing only on technology. How might technology best serve a hymnal for the 21st century that will be published maybe in 2020 or 2022? The website that I mentioned earlier has received 1,300 or more bits of input and feedback. One of the surveys of adults asked for your 10 favorite hymns, 1,600 participants in that. That's pretty cool. But then there are the 120 who went above and beyond any call of duty. Those 120 people, maybe one of you, them is you or more, those 120 people ranked every hymn in the hymnal and the supplement. So we got a good bit of information on that. And students in Wells Elementary School classrooms, they've been involved in rankings and opinions as well, which is kind of a neat way to get the next generation involved. And that's the end of my part. I think I probably have about 4 or 5 minutes for questions. So what else would you like to know? Yes. Yes, the St. Peter Chapel maxes out around 1,300. And even with 1,300, you have people sitting on the air conditioning vents and standing in the entryway and all kind of scrunched up. We also, in 2011, spent one day at Martin Luther College, our college, with its splendid chapel. It's just an amazing chapel. But if you put a full orchestra in there and reduce the seating, you can probably only get 900 people if you have a full orchestra in the MLC chapel. So it's kind of hard to beat that 1,700 seat chapel.
What is the target date for release of the new hymnal?
Initially, the target date for the release of the new hymnal was 2024 on the 500th anniversary of the publication of the first Lutheran hymnal. But the publishing house says, you know, it would be better for the business end of this project if you could finish earlier than that. So we may sacrifice the sentimentality of the 500th anniversary of the first Lutheran hymnal for better business practice. Anybody else? Yes.
Could you explain a little more about the counseling aspect of your...
Sure. The question is, can I explain more about congregational counseling, that subgroup that I'm somewhat connected with? The major part of their program is called self-assessment and adjustment. And the word self is very important in that. It's not that there are these outside experts who come in and look at what you're all doing and say, well, that's not good, that's not good, you should do this instead. They involve the congregation in talking about what they are doing and aren't doing, what they're doing well, what they're not doing well, and the members of the congregation come up with a plan and a report that will help chart direction for the congregation. And they have other components of their program too. One that would definitely apply in a congregation like this is, the acronym is MOSE, or MOSE, M-O-S-E, Ministry and Operations, I can't remember. Hine likes weird acronyms, but what this does is study the people resources in a congregation with very powerful tools from the business world that assess what are the needs and how are people spending their time and who's doing what. And it sort of helps the congregation realign how they prioritize people resources, which of course isn't only called and paid staff, it's all of you as well. So they have some really good things going. They also have what they call this school of strategic planning, partly because of the backlog that they are facing, where they can't get to the congregations as fast as the congregations want. They're doing an intensive weekend thing for a minimum of 5 congregations that talks about strategic planning in congregations. I'm guessing my time is just about up, so I will transition here to the Hebrew guy. And
can you hear me now?
Yes.
There we go. Thank you. I think most of you know me, but I'll introduce myself anyway for those who don't know me. I'm Pastor Bill Tackmeyer. I served here at St. Mark's for 14 years, and I now teach at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary is located in a suburb of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We have an 80-acre campus. It's a very beautiful campus. It's almost like a park. It once was an 80-acre farm that was transitioned into a seminary campus back in 1929. So it's been there for a long time. The history of our seminary, though, goes back about twice that far. We celebrated our 150th anniversary just last year. St. Mark's is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. And our seminary building is built to be somewhat reminiscent of the Wartburg Castle in Germany, where Martin Luther spent almost a year translating the New Testament into German when the Bible was first beginning to be translated into the modern languages. This is the inside of our chapel. Here we are at worship. We worship every morning in chapel. We have a rather small student body. About 125 young men are enrolled at the seminary. Almost all of them are graduates of our Synod's College, Martin Luther College in New Ulm, Minnesota. And those who are in the pastor track go on then for 4 more years of instruction after college. Here we're worshiping in the morning. Usually one of the students will lead us in worship because, of course, all of our students are learning to be pastors. So leading the morning devotion is one way in which they get to practice their skills of public speaking, of crafting a message, a law gospel message, to set us off on a wonderful day of learning God's word and learning how to proclaim that word. Here's looking at the seminary chapel from the opposite angle. I'm preaching on this particular evening. It's opening service at the beginning of the school year at the end of August. Many of our students are married by this time. They're all at least 22 years old. We have some that are second career students who are considerably older. As a matter of fact, I had a student last year who was over 60. So he had me by quite a few years. Here I am teaching in the classroom. I teach mainly Old Testament and homiletics. Homiletics is how to preach. I had the privilege, I think it was my first year of actually teaching in class, to have had Gunnar Lederman as my student in both Genesis and first year homiletics. Now I had Gunnar when I was here at St. Mark's. I had him for confirmation class. So it was very exciting to hear him preach his first 2 sermons. The way we handle homiletics at St. Mark's is at the beginning of the year, we teach them how to write a sermon, and we help each one of them individually in writing that first sermon. Then when they're ready to preach, they preach it to their classmates. The classmates sit in the chapel as regular congregation members. They begin by singing a hymn. Then the student preaches to his classmates for the first time ever. And at the end of his sermon, the classmates have an opportunity to give their feedback. Can you guess what kind of feedback they give? They're very kind to one another because they know that they're going to be up maybe the next class period. So I'm always encouraging them, be tough on these guys. They need to hear the hard things now so that they can become a better preacher once they get out into our congregations. Here I'm teaching an Old Testament class. In Old Testament, I teach the book of Genesis, and I teach the book of Psalms. I have all the first-year students for Genesis and all the second-year students for the book of Psalms. We study them in the Hebrew. Here's our Christmas concert. There's a lot of music that goes on at the seminary as well. Pastor Gerlach was talking a lot about music. Professor Tiefel has been at our seminary for about 30 years. He's the director of the choir, and he really has a knack at working with young men. So he usually gets almost half of the students that are on campus to be in choir. And it's one of our biggest events during the year. Besides the chapel, we have a very large auditorium that seats about 1,000 people. And we often fill that for 2 concerts on one of the weekends before Christmas. We also have fun at the seminary. This is our basketball team. We have no competitive sports at seminary. Many of our students at college participated in things like football and basketball, but at seminary, they just do it for fun. They play in a tournament every year with two other Lutheran seminaries, the two seminaries of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The seminary at Fort Wayne, Indiana, always hosts the tournament. We go, the two other seminaries send a team, and then there's usually just a community college to round out the four. We won again this last year, and the coaches of the teams for the Missouri teams will often compliment our students and say, "Boy, I like watching you guys play. You are really a team. Who coaches you?" There's no coach. But they've played in college together for 4 years, and it seems that a lot of other seminaries in the United States today mostly have second career students. So our students are nice and lean yet in their 20s, and they sometimes play guys in their 40s. So I think that's part of it. The end of the year is always the highlight at the seminary, though. We have a very exciting week that we have people who come from all over the country, especially friends and relatives of the students who are graduating and who will be receiving their first call that week. During that week, we have four big events. The first one is the vicar call service. After 2 years of studying at the seminary, we send our students out to be vicars in congregations. They're student pastors. Maybe you remember the one that we had at St. Mark's during my day, Vicar Corthalls. Peter Corthalls had completed his first 2 years at the seminary, and the seminary sent him out for what a lot of people say is the most important year of all, where they get to practice everything that they've learned at the seminary. I know Peter, I've seen him numerous times since then, and he really appreciated his time here at St. Mark's because he just felt there were so many different areas of ministry that he got to work in. Outreach, preaching sermons, youth work, teaching Bible class. That's what the vicars will do for a year. They don't know where they're going to go. They're assigned. In the most recent years, it's mostly the seminary professors that give the most input into which congregation a vicar is going to serve in. And there was a time where vicars were sent to whatever congregation wanted a vicar and could afford a vicar. And often those congregations were kind of using the vicar almost like a second pastor. And it wasn't always the optimal situation for the young man. So today the seminary faculty has a lot more input into it, and we're choosing congregations that we know have good, strong pastoral leadership, where there are a lot of different types of ministry going on, that the vicar is going to get a well-rounded education during that year that he's vicaring in a congregation. But the vicar won't find out where he's going to be sent until the Tuesday night of call week. There's a service at the end of which the synod president stands up and reads the list of the upcoming vicars and then announces which congregation, which city, which state that vicar is going to be serving in. So the upcoming vicars are always very excited and nervous for that day. That's the first of our special occasions. Then on Thursday of that week is the pastoral call day. There's an even larger service. This is the pastor call service from 2 years ago. We often fill up the auditorium for that service. Friends and relatives come from all over the United States. Sometimes people who aren't even connected with a graduating senior will come. I first served in Michigan, and some of my members from that first congregation will come every couple years, and they will always say to me, every Wells person should come for call week, because it's like the whole synod coming together and sending out these newest pastors into the place where they're going to serve. So at the end of that service, President Schrader, the president of our synod, stands up and again reads the list of all the seniors and announces where they're going to be serving as full-time pastors indefinitely for however long the Lord chooses to have them serve that congregation. That's at the end of the fourth year of our education. So the first 2 years are classroom education. The third year is this vicar year. Then the vicars come back for one more year of classroom instruction, and then they graduate and are sent out into the congregations and mission fields of our world. This is one of the seniors in the center there waiting for his name to be read a couple of years ago. His wife is on his left. His mother is on, no, is, well, it would be on our left. On his right is his wife, and his mother is there on the right. You can see how expectantly they're waiting for his name to be read, and he was sent to Long Valley, New Jersey. So when it comes just out of the blue like that, it's really an exhilarating moment. It's the high point of a man's time at the seminary. Then on Friday, well, Thursday night of that week, we have our commencement concert, and then the next morning, Friday morning, we have graduation in the auditorium. I'm the secretary of the faculty, and so I usually read the lessons for that service. You can see our stained glass windows in the background there. And then I help President Wendland hand out the diplomas. This young man has some connections to California, too. He had once been a teacher and a principal in one of our schools in Reading. And after teaching in Reading for I don't remember how many years, he decided that he wanted to be a pastor. Went back to school, went through all 4 years of the seminary, maybe even a couple of years at MLC to get the languages, Greek and Hebrew. And then here's him. His name is Nathan Book, graduating on Friday of call week. These are three graduates from last month, and they're a good example of how our students are beginning to get out into the world more than in the days that I went through the seminary. All of them have served in some capacity or studied in other parts of the world. Jacob Haig is on the left, and after he graduated from Martin Luther College, he took a year out and studied at our sister seminary in Leipzig, Germany, before he came to the seminary, and then spent 4 years at SEM and graduated just last month. Ben Ehlers is in the middle. Ben spent a year, or maybe it was even 2 years, in China, working with Friends of China and teaching English as a second language, and then doing Bible studies in people's homes and apartments in China. He even met a young lady in China and is married to a Chinese wife. They just had their first child during this year. And then on the right is Brock Groth. Brock also spent a year in China teaching English as a second language and doing Bible study, I believe before he even came to seminary. And Brock met an American young lady in China and was also married in China. And Brock got, I think, one of our most exciting calls this year. He got called to India. And he's going to be working in the seminary program in, now I'm trying to think, is Andhra Pradesh is where it is, but I think that's the region of India. It's in the eastern part of India. So he'll be going there shortly. I thought of Babu and Suma on the day that he got the call to India. Then in the summer, we also have summer quarter at the seminary, and pastors who have been in parishes, some of them many years already, will often come back for continuing education. It's coming up these next 2 weeks where we'll be having summer quarter, and sometimes our professors are sent to other sites to have classes. One of our professors, Professor Gergel, was teaching last week in Southern California. Those are called seminary satellite courses, where the professor is sent to the pastors rather than the pastors coming to Mequon. And Professor Cherney is teaching in Maryland this summer. He's teaching a course on Jeremiah. Last summer, I got sent to our sister seminary in Leipzig, Germany. They tried their first summer quarter ever, and they wanted to invite pastors from different parts of Europe to take classes, and I had two classes last summer. One was on the book of Ecclesiastes, and the other one was on preaching Christ from the Old Testament. I had different groups of men for the two different weeks, for the two different courses. Some of them were crossovers, and I had seven different countries that were represented in my classes. The largest group that I had was from Germany, but there were also four pastors from Bulgaria, and then there was one from Albania, one from Sweden, one from Norway, and I won't be able to remember where the others were. But here's a picture of one of the groups that I had, and was teaching just outside of Leipzig, Germany. Because these men came from numerous different countries, English was the common language among them, so I taught in English. But it gave us a nice opportunity to take a family vacation while I was there. So after the 2 weeks that I was teaching, Dorcas and the kids came over, and we got to spend a week mostly in Bavaria. We did little outings from, we found a really charming bed and breakfast that we stayed at most of the week, right at the foot of the Alps. And it was a farming village, and the pastures were right around the bed and breakfast, so we saw the cows, and the pasture went right up to the mountain. I mean, the pasture went like this, and then the mountain went like that. And this is one of our outings that we took to Berchtesgaden. If you ever go to Germany, you have to go there. Hitler had his retreat there. It was called the Eagle's Nest, and it is up there in the mountains. First, you drive as high as you can, then you take a special bus that will take you up higher. The bus drops you off at a tunnel and you walk into the mountain. I don't know how many hundreds of yards. Then you take an elevator up about 500 feet and you come out at this spot that has these this kind of overview. It's really stunning. Since our topic is what are you doing today, let me just catch you up with the family as well. Dorcas is working half-time as an office manager in an office that runs two different businesses. One has to do with computers, and the other one has to do with window washing. And then she still does her side job that she loves so much of taking pictures, photography. Sam just graduated from college this past May, so he's back home for the summer looking for a job in the Milwaukee area. And Maddie just finished her first year at MLC in the teacher track. Since I mentioned MLC, I wanted to put in a little plug for them as well. I've got a few slides here from our college. Martin Luther College in New Ulm, Minnesota is where all of our pastors and teachers and staff ministers receive their college training. It's in New Ulm, Minnesota, just a charming little town of 13,000 in southern Minnesota. And these slides are from the day that we went, when we took Maddie there to visit the year before she went. This is Old Main, it's called, the original main building of the campus. Pastor Gerlach mentioned in his presentation the chapel. They have a new chapel there that on the day that they dedicated, Gunner got to carry the cross. He was the first one through the doors as they all processed into the new college chapel. And it's beautiful. That's the altar area. Oh yeah, these pictures don't capture it all. That's the organ. Has the same kind of organ as St. Mark's, the same builder, only three times the size of St. Mark's. That's looking at it from in back. Pastor Gerlach says it seats about 900 people. MLC has an enrollment of a little over 700 students that are on campus, but they're getting more and more online programs, so that I think, I just heard last week, I think it's something like 1,200 enrolled now, if you count the master's programs and the people that are enrolled online. Maddie has had a great year there. And I really, with these closing slides, I want to encourage those of you who are young people, and also you parents and grandparents, to think about sending your children to a college like Martin Luther College. I mean, it's such a blessing to have your children have the experience of college with people who share their common faith. Sam went to a public university in Wisconsin, and he got a very good education. But when we would go to the town, Dorcas and I were always a little nervous, because shortly before you get to that town, there's a series of billboards. The first one is for a porn shop. Then the next two, some Christian organization has put up billboards that say something like, "What would Jesus say about pornography?" or something like that. Then there are four more billboards for porn shops. So that as you look at those billboards, you can just see the battle that's going on in America today between the forces of the Christian faith and the forces of evil that are out there in our world today. We are always so happy when we drive into New Ulm because it's the cutest, it's the closest thing to a little German village that there is, I think, in the United States. I mentioned in my sermon today the church in Ulm, Germany. Well, New Ulm is people from that town in Germany who moved to America, and it's the nicest little town to send your children to. Now back to the seminary. At Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, we have a copy of this painting that really hangs in the city church in Wittenberg, Germany. And I always use it as an illustration for what the purpose of Christian preaching is. You can see Martin Luther on the right in one of those old-fashioned pulpits from Germany 500 years ago, preaching to the congregation of people there on the left. But of course, the people don't see the preacher. If the preacher is preaching the right thing, they see Christ, the crucified Christ, who died for their sins as that sermon is being proclaimed. That's what pastors do. That's what teachers do in the classroom. They help the people of 2015 AD to see Jesus. So I'd just like to end my part of the presentation for the young people who are with us today, and for those of you who are parents and grandparents who can encourage your children and grandchildren to consider the ministry. Do you love Christ and His Word? Are you a people person? The other side of the ministry, besides the Word, is connecting that Word with people. Do you like working with people? Do you like helping people? Then the ministry may be for you. That's the end of my portion. Any questions? We have about 5 minutes. Steve. Oh.
Just to let you know, Peter Kortholz is doing quite well in Amherst, New Hampshire. I got to visit him last fall. Took me an hour and 20 minutes to drive from my sister's house to visit the church, but he was there and I got to see the kids as well. You didn't screw him up too bad, would you?
Peter Kortholz is currently a pastor in, is it New Hampshire? Amherst, New Hampshire in New England. Steve visited him recently at his church. Miriam, I guess we're handing around the mic. Can you hand it down to Miriam? Yes. I didn't for this trip, but I've made a trip there in the past and have been to the church where Bach was organist in Leipzig, Germany. Yes. John?
Could you tell us a little bit about the state of the Lutheran Church in Germany?
Yes. The modern German church, they really don't use the term Lutheran anymore. There are Catholics in Germany, and then there are evangelicals. And it's a very modern, liberal theology that's preached there. The group that I was working with is a separate synod of Lutherans among the Germans. It's a very small church body. I think they only have about 3,000 members in all of their congregations. Their congregations are very small. But they're kind of the equivalent of the Wells in Germany. They're called the Evangelical Lutheran Free Church of Germany because they are free of the state church, which has ties with the government. One of the things that Martin Luther strove for during the Reformation was to emphasize the separateness of church and state. But the German church never really broke free of its connections with the government. And many Germans in the 1800s who wanted to be free of any government control over the state came to America and started confessional Lutheran synods like the Missouri Synod, and then eventually Wells kind of followed in those footsteps. But there are small groups of Germans still in Germany who teach the same theology as we do, who stick to the inspired Word of God and the teachings of Martin Luther, and they're called the Evangelical Lutheran Free Church. Jenny?
What are some of the different calls that
the pastors made during the Reformation?
Because when I
remember
being
molded,
mm-hmm.
We
used to call it
moldy.
Yeah. Yeah, because they didn't go to a church. They went more to like a school.
True.
So what are their roles?
Jenny's question is, what type of calls do pastors get when they graduate from the seminary? Most of the graduates are assigned to congregations so that they're parish pastors. Sometimes they'll be sent to mission fields, like the young man I showed you who was sent to India. But sometimes they're called to be instructors in one of our prep schools, or maybe at Martin Luther College. Or there's a role called tutor, where they live in the dorm and they help the students who live on campus in the dorm, and perhaps they teach one class per week. So it can be a teaching call, but most young men are sent to preaching calls. think we got about 30 seconds if there's one more quick question. The bell. George.
When are you going to translate, give us a Wells translation of the Bible?
George asked about a translation of the Bible. There is a group of Wells pastors. It's headed up by one of our retiring professors, Professor Brug, and they have translated quite a few of the books of the Bible already. Northwestern Publishing House is going to print it. It's called the Wartburg Project. I don't know what year, though, is their target. I know they were hoping to get the New Testament done by 2017 for the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know about it.